Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we've got a real talk with a real leader. Today's guest is Alex Kerr. Alex is the founder and CEO and lead data nerd for Trajectory. Trajectory is a sponsorship analytics platform that also drives revenue. And I am just so glad to have you on today. Thanks so much for joining us, Alex.
Thanks for inviting me. I couldn't be more excited to hang out and chat.
Absolutely. So folks, I always start by telling you how I know my guests. So I was generously introduced to Alex from a mutual friend who's been on the show, Tony Schiller. And Tony has a really wonderful way of connecting with people and connecting people. And so I will also share that I am proud and grateful to share with you folks that I have recently become a strategic advisor with Alex at Trajectory. I just love what you're doing, and I would love for you to start by grounding the audience in what is Trajectory?
Wow, that's like well, first off, the one and only Tony Schiller
for sure. Right?
Incredible connector. We could do our own podcast in session just on Tony, I'm sure, at some point. So Trajectory, that's a big can of worms. But effectively what it was born out of was a long time ago, I had the opportunity to work for Monumental Sports Entertainment out in Washington, D.C. For anyone who's listening or watching who's not familiar, they're the organization that owns and operates the NHL's Washington Capitals, the NBA's Washington Wizards, WNBA Mystics, Go Sticks. They had AFL teams, arenas, esports, you name it. And I had the cool opportunity to help build the business intelligence team there. And my division of the BI team effectively oversaw primary, secondary research, but also sponsorship data analytics and insights. And one of the things that we discovered while we were there was you could report on a couple of things pretty efficiently, social and television data, but there is so much more out there, from emails to web and LEDs and static signs, that typically fell by the wayside and just were very, very difficult to report on. Now, I'm putting this lightly, but effectively I was like banging my head against a wall, and our team like could not figure this stuff out. So did that for a number of years. We did the best that we could, went to the brand side, and was getting very little data in return for the tens of millions of dollars that we were spending in sponsorship. So I was on the other side of the marketplace at this point, and really just came to this realization that data and insights, really in a holistic way with a consistent series of metrics that was really calibrated by market and by team and by brand, really was non-existent. So effectively what Trajectory does is we help the world's biggest brands, whether or not they be teams or traditional brands like your Geico's of the world, evaluate their sponsorship impact and actually place a value on it.
Yeah, it's so, when you're talking about it, I think like the evolution of where sponsorship has been and where it is and where it's going is profoundly different. I mean, sure. You know, again, I'm thinking back to old school, let me date myself, in the beginning of my career, where it was literally so much the logo slap. And it was, yeah. You know, everybody wanted courtside signage, if you're talking about the NBA. And not that people don't want that now, of course they do. But it's been, and then it, I feel like there was such a wave of people getting the idea of like, oh, actually, no, make them mutually beneficial so that both parties are benefiting. And then, you know, I think like with the age of social media and all this, it's really forced all this evolution of the discipline of sponsorship. But I think this is this other element that, to your point, hasn't been paid enough attention to, and the dot connecting of it all. And as you talk about a lot, the storytelling of it, right? Because sure. A sponsorship is really just a bunch of assets if you're not actually telling a story, and if it's actually not working to drive results, to drive growth. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts about that, and how does it help like kind of put that next level to that evolution?
Yeah, and there's a ton to unpack there, but I'll sort of keep it at a high level and happy to drill down deeper and go down the rabbit hole, the proverbial rabbit hole. Well, first and foremost, it sounds easy to like talk about, right? Where it's like, oh, it's a logo slap. Shouldn't we put data behind that? I think for sure people have wanted to put data behind it, but it's hard, right? At the end of the day, and one of the things that I think makes it really hard is, one, a lot of this data lives in disparate systems all over the place, right? Your email data lives one place, your web data lives another. It's super easy to say this, but unless you've actually like been in the trenches and had to deal with the data itself, all the data is structured very, very differently. And like that sounds simple, but like that's a really freaking hard task that takes quite a bit of time to one, export all this data, re-export it because you did it wrong the first time when you did it. You have to clean the data. Everything's structured totally differently. So to really get any function in use, like you're preparing this data for hours and hours and hours. And then what you're left with at the end of the day are totally different metrics across the board. You're reporting impressions in some and reach in others and engagements or likes or comments or valuation. And so you end up being left with, after you've done all this heavy lifting, totally different metrics that don't really equate to one another. Now that's one of the things that we solve for to have consistency. But the reality is like this has been a really, really hard task. And so the days of the logo slap are still there. And I don't actually necessarily mean that's a bad thing either, because I do actually, I'll be a contrarian for a minute from being the data nerd that I am and say there is sort of like a gray area and magic to sponsorship, right? Like seeing your logo in lights, like next to your favorite team, and what that does, depending on like what your objective is as to whether or not it's to build awareness for your brand or whether or not it's really an employee play where it's like they're proud to see their logo in lights. Like there is a gray area and like a magic to sponsorship that's really hard to quantify. So like throwing your logo up there without a ton of data can still make sense in the right way. But the way that I sort of look at it from a historical perspective is this, the sponsorship data and the analytics and insights is really the next big area, I think, for sports media and entertainment. And it comes down to the simple fact that ticketing is generally speaking, the highest revenue driver for an organization. And so that's where a lot of the time, the focus and the effort has been really for the last decade is business intelligence teams have had more prevalence across the industry. The next and usually typically the second biggest revenue driver, unless you're esports, then it's number one, is sponsorship. And so you sort of come to think that this is going to be the next big area where people really want to focus. And I think we're already seeing that in a number of ways. Coming out of COVID, there's more pressure than ever coming from the brands that are actually opening up their pocketbooks to try to prove the ROI and the insights and the value is like, is the juice worth the squeeze? So I think we are entering into the right time period, but it's kind of the next 5 years thing in our opinion, because it's going to take a lot of groups quite a bit of time to try to figure out how they want to effectively evaluate their sponsorship, whether or not they're a brand or whether or not they're a team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit on a good point there about how what's happening coming out of the pandemic and how, or just in general at this time period, I think that with brands spending in the sponsorship space, and people have asked me like, what do I think and what do I'm seeing, what am I seeing? I think that brands are still spending. I think they're spending, they're being definitely more discerning about what they're going to spend on. And they may not spend on as many things, but they may take more of a focused, like double down approach. So I say that because it becomes even more important on both sides, the property side and the brand side, to be able to assess what that, you know, what the metrics are and how is it actually working for me, for my property, for the brand. So I think it's where people almost had the luxury of thinking, do they need something like this or not? It's now, I think, becoming a tool to help brands and properties kind of keep up with what, like, the marketplace.
I agree completely, and I'm going to be a contrarian for a moment because therein lies the rub. It is really easy for every organization to sit there and say, we want to be more data driven. We are being more data driven. I want to make decisions on our spend based on hard facts and information and insights so I can know exactly where I want to spend my next dollar. I wouldn't say more often than not, but it's a surprising amount of organizations that will say they want to be more data driven, but when push comes to shove, they fall back to the same tendencies that they've usually done, and they'll just continue to either invest or they'll continue to report the same way, depending on which side of the marketplace you are, either the buyer or the sell side of sponsorship. And so it's always sort of interesting, is even though we are in this period where everyone's talking about data, we want better valuation periods, but really only a handful are really willing to put their money where their mouth is and actually spend and invest. And I think these are going to be the organizations, whether or not be a team or whether or not be an agency or whether or not be a brand, that are really going to start to put distance between themselves and everyone else that they're effectively competing against within the marketplace, right? And so that's why I sort of come back and I'll say, I think it's not just like this is the period right now in the next 12 months, but like over the next several years, half a decade, or whatever that time frame ends up being. I kind of give that range because I think you're going to start to see a separation of either the agencies or the brands that are really the ones that are willing to spend in it, because it is really easy to sit here and say, oh, we want to be data driven. It's a totally different thing to actually put it into motion and to put it into practice. And so I think, at least responding to your last point, I kind of sit there and I smile a little bit because it's like, well, you know, everyone says it, but I do genuinely think there are more articles being written. There's more media content around exactly what you said, which is like people want a better way to effectively evaluate all of their sponsorship with a consistent methodology. And that's one of the key pieces that our thesis on it that's really been missing, is there's no way to effectively compare these things against one another because all the methodologies are different. And so that's, again, part of the space that we're trying to come in and carve out, which is how do we create a consistent methodology so that we can evaluate an out-of-home board versus an LED versus an email versus a social post versus a television, visible signage, so that you can better understand how these things are relative to one another. But anyway, off my soapbox.
No, that's actually, it's great. As you were talking, it made me think about, you know, we're especially, you know, what there's so many companies what have gone through recently where, you know, there's a downturn in one industry, the tech industry, for example. I'm speaking from very close to my own experience right now, where a company then has to start making reductions, and whether that's people or it's tools, it's anything that are representing cost. And so, to your point about a lot of times people say they want to be data driven, but then that can be like the first thing to go
Sure.
when you're like, well, you know, how am I going to cut cost? And so, I think from a storytelling perspective, I keep coming back to that thought where it's where I think that if you're in a seat where you are trying to sell sponsorships, or you're trying, you know, you're trying to make the choice of where you're going to put your dollars for a sponsorship, I think that it like the two can't really be, not can't. I think that if it's really going to be successful, the two shouldn't be separated per se, the conversation. It's like to do my job effectively as a salesperson, to do my job successfully as a brand person on the brand side, and be able to actually decide, okay, where's my money going to go, and then how am I going to tell that story about it? Again, I feel like it's a bit of cutting off your nose to spite your face if you just,
Yeah,
you're like, oh, well, you
right.
don't need the data, you don't need the service, or you know, the platform that's going to help you to figure out if your spend was successful or not, or how it's performing. So I just find it really interesting where I think a lot of people make those decisions from a cost-cutting perspective in a really short-sighted manner. But these, I really think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm connected to you, I really do think, and I've experienced that, like, if we don't set our people up for success to be able to do their jobs well, then what the hell are we doing?
No, I think that's all well said. Part of the reason that I think we get along so well is we're both data nerds at our underneath everything. But it is also interesting. I think you're dead on with what you said, but I do think it is the industry is also fundamentally changing in terms of like the way of thinking, in terms of like how they prioritize whether or not it's data or whether or not it's something else. If for no other reason than the data movement has really been going strong for like the last 10 years or so. And so the people that started at the very, very bottom rung as coordinators and managers are now starting to get up into those leadership positions, right? And like the way of thinking is putting more of an emphasis and a priority on the data and on the insights. And so by no way, shape, or form are we totally realized, but I do think if you were to compare organizations that were cutting analytics, data, insight in times of downturn today versus 10 years ago, I think there's probably a pretty stark difference in terms of who they're prioritizing, in terms of who to keep. But I still think that gap is quite massive, right? And I think old guard is the wrong way to describe it, because it's not necessarily old guard, but it's who, a lot of the leadership role in these positions. It really comes down to like where do they come from, right? Did they come from the brand side, the sales side? Did they come from a data background? And so I think that'll hopefully, knock on wood, continue to go the direction where data nerds will rule the world at the end of the day when the dust settles. But unfortunately, to your point though, that's still the quickest thing to cut. It's like the arts in school, right? Where it's like, oh, it's the first thing to be cut, and you're like, oh no, like we're gonna lose so much as a result of this, you don't even realize. But anyway, that's my bad analogy.
Exactly. I just think, people where people are listening and they may see it, they're in their seat and they realize how much, or they're like interested in it. Again, I just think there's a, if you're gonna fight for a tool that you need to help you do your job, again, I think there's a story to be told there about how, a tool can really help you to be able to do your job successfully. And then at the end of the
Shameless
day,
plug,
just
shameless plug.
what, yeah,
Shameless
which.
plug.
And I didn't mean it that this is honestly just how I feel, and this is why I gravitated to you and the opportunity to collaborate with you. I talk about leadership so much on this, but again, it's like there is a res I believe that there's a responsibility that we have as leaders to make sure that the people who are in their jobs are actually set up for success to do their jobs. And so, again, I think that when we start taking tools away from people because of cost cutting, they're, if someone's in a sponsorship seat and they're supposed to be driving revenue, well, you need certain tools to be able to do that. So there is a, I just really believe in the storytelling aspect of that. And so I'll get off my soapbox on
So,
that.
well, am I allowed to interview you? Am I allowed to ask you questions
Okay,
on this session?
sure. This is
So
a free-for-all.
you bring up, oh wow, we can talk about anything. So stand script, stand script. So you bring up a really interesting point about like the leadership and trying to like empower and set like your employees up for success. Curious to pick your brain. Like how have how what has been your approach to finding success in that? Because there are so many different ways to do it, and I'm always curious to find other people's sort of secret sauce, so to speak.
You mean to set employees up for success?
Yeah, as a
I
leader.
think literally, I think like if we have to understand what are we asking that person to deliver? And if it's to deliver revenue, then again, we're just talking about the sponsorship seat, and we can talk about other areas either, even in a marketing seat, if they're responsible at the end of the day for marketing the sale of something. Then again, to me, it's like, what is going to help set that person up for success? You look
Sure.
at everything from literally what are the tools to help them to do their job? That may be a support staff, that may be technology, that may be, I don't know what else in that off the top of my head. But then, I mean, the other thing too is
Environment, right? It's setting them
exactly.
up for success. What's their schedule? It's meeting them halfway to understand what are the environments that allow them to be the best versions of themselves, so to speak, right? Because everyone has a different way of getting to a solution. So how do you empower them to bring out what makes them sort of special and the best versions of themselves? So I'm dead on with you. You kind of took the words out of my mouth in a lot of ways.
No, absolutely. I mean, that can even be like time of day. When is the person most productive? My most productive time of the day is at the crack of dawn. Always has been that way for me. It's like for me to schedule a 5 p.m. meeting, my brain starts to go a little mushy. And so, it's just so to your point, what makes someone tick? So when you're looking at from like more of that human aspect, what does that person need? Is that person have personality traits that are more introverted, are more extroverted? I think an element I'm going to lean into our guy Tony, who talks so much about active listening. And so really listening to someone, checking in with them, I think that these are things that can set someone up for success. And not just checking in with them to say like, how are you and what's going on? Checking in also means, how am I doing for you? Is there anything that I can do more or different or less to help you in your role? And that's something that I'm not totally sure where I picked that up, but that's something I started asking staff in the last few years of my leading people was, not just what, how am I doing, or give me feedback. That's like an open-ended question of nothing. Most of the time, when you ask that question, people, you know, a leader asks a question and a person can look at you with like, you know, deer in headlights. Well, shit, what do I say? What can I say? What can't I say? So I
Right.
learned to add to that. Is there anything more? Is there something different? Or is there something less that I can be doing to help you to be successful in what you're doing? Because, you know, again, at the end of the day, we're leading people in their ability to be successful in their job. And what does that mean is how they're able to impact the business. So when we start taking away things that help them to do that, it just becomes a vicious cycle. And so contributing to, you know, again, like attrition and all of these things. So that's my perspective.
No, that's awesome. I'm gonna steal a couple of those techniques because I think I can certainly continue to get better and better at a variety of things to name to say the least.
Can't we
So,
all?
yeah, never stop learning.
Yeah, it's so intriguing. So I want to ask you a bit. We talk so much about evolution, and I've mentioned that word a lot, and I was talking about it more in the discipline and where we're at with sponsorship and analytics and stuff. But I want to talk about your evolution. So when I was preparing for this, I kind of forgot your background. And from what I read, you started out as a financial advisor. And so you've made these different steps in your career. You're now at the seat of founder and CEO. I forgot to mention this earlier. You're also in your air quotes spare time. I don't know how you have this time, but an adjunct professor for Georgetown and Northwestern University. So like that's a so talk to us and help the audience understand kind of what is your evolution been, whether that's
Sure.
career-wise, personal, to get you where you are today.
And I think you once asked me a very similar question and asked whether or not it was a linear career trajectory, no pun intended, or whether or not it was one that was meandering. And I thought that was a really interesting way to ask that question. And I'll start by answering that, and I'll walk you through the history, which was I don't think there was ever here is the end goal. So I never had that vision of like, here's where I'm going to be in 5 or 10 years, and how often do you actually know that? But every move I've made has been with a purpose and has been with a reason that has led me to where I am. So it's certainly has not been meandering, but it certainly hasn't been linear either. So it's, somewhere in between, and then take a left turn and then come back. But yeah, no, I started in as a financial advisor. I was doing private wealth management right out of college. I was an econ major, and so I said, well, econ major, economics, financials, financial advisor, boom. And it's like, oh my God, like going back and even like gives me like kind of like a panic attack, even thinking about like how I figured out how to get my first job out of college. I did that, and I discovered that I loved my clients. I loved working with data to make decision making. And I've always been kind of a data person. I was an econ major after all. But man, did I hate that job. And it was just like, it was a lot of cold call sales, which, by the way, is one of the most useful skill sets you could ever learn. And genuinely, I'm so thankful that I did that for a couple of years, because I learned how do you start conversations and like how do you relate to people. I'm not saying I'm great at it, but at least I have some tactics to use and pull out of the tool bag every once in a while. But did that for a while. Didn't really feel like I had a mission in terms of like really loving like what I was doing. I ended up hopping to a nonprofit. I was working for a nonprofit called Opportunity International. They do incredible work with microfinance, so like poverty alleviation in like third world countries, Eastern Africa. Spent a little bit of time out there for a couple weeks here and there. Loved the mission, fell in love, jumped there. And sort of came to this realization after a while that I was sort of working with like marketing and analytics. I love my job, but I came to the conclusion that to really be successful in business, you have to have a really strong business foundation. And so I said, well, I guess the next step for me is business school and to go get my MBA. And so this is like literally how my brain is working. So I'm like, all right, go get my MBA. So have an incredible opportunity. We were talking to it before we kicked off today, but was very fortunate to go get my MBA at Fuqua, which is Duke, and feel very fortunate. And I think they made an admissions mistake, but thank goodness they let me in. There's nothing they can do about it now. And I really wanted to go run my own nonprofit, right? And so I wanted to run my own nonprofit, and then I got some advice while I was at school saying, if you really want to make a difference in the world, you can help the individual, or you can go be an iBanker for 10 years and you can make a huge impact when you want to do like social entrepreneurship, social impact investing 10 years. And I was like, heck no, I do not want to be an iBanker. And I may have been having a late night coffee with a couple of friends on their couch that night, commiserating as one does over coffee, late night coffee,
Over coffee.
read between the lines. They said, hey, you, what do you like to do? And I said, I love data and I love strategy. And they said, have you ever thought about working in sports? And I was like, no, I have very little interest. I didn't even know this was a thing. And they said, hey, the chief marketing officer is a graduate from our program at Monumental Sports. You should reach out to them. So, to make a very, very long story short, I emailed the CMO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, who is a grad from our program, in the middle of the night, saying, "Hey, I'm Alex. I like data and strategy. Would love to chat if you have any internship opportunities." And one thing led to another, and I was very fortunate where he gave me an opportunity to be an intern. And it was the coolest freaking job. It was marketing, data analytics, and strategy all wrapped into one. And it wasn't like you're bussing tables, like I was actually working on real projects. And I'll always be thankful to Mr. Joe DuPriest as a result of that. And fell in love with working in the industry because I thought there was a really big opportunity to really try to impact change through data, because there just wasn't a lot of it, around 2012, 2013 when I was there. Not a lot of groups are using data. BI wasn't really a thing at that point. And I was fortunate, got invited back full time, did that for about 5 years, worked for a couple of really smart people while I was there. And the rest is history. So, yeah, that's why I sort of say like there's always sort of been these connections with data and marketing and strategy and analytics. But my path into sports and then subsequently what I've done at Trajectory was really more happenstance than planned. So I know that was long-winded, but
No,
hopefully some colorful context.
it was great. And the thing I just want to point out is, as people in the audience are listening, you often hear people say, like, it's so hard to get into sports, and it can be. And I will say that the approach you took is interesting, because, like, similarly in a way, it was just me being persistent and very proactive. I was literally like banging down doors at the NBA office when I
You
started
need
my
to.
career. Yeah, to get in. But I think, like, again, if you want to be in a space or you have some interest, I can't say enough how important it is to, like, just reach out. I mean, because I think there are a lot of people who are in those suits who do want to have a conversation and who do want to consider new talent. And, I think that, so anyway, I think you bring up a
No,
really
so you actually bring up one really important piece, and it's a part of the story that I left out. So I was incredibly lucky to have gotten that internship. But as you know, sports is just in time hiring, right? So like to graduate and have a year left of school, there were no full-time offers out there. And so the part of the story that I actually left out, which I think is a really big piece of advice, is you have to bang down doors and you have to reach out. And I don't think it's a luck factor necessarily of working in sports. Like if you want it enough and you work hard enough, like it will happen. And the part of the story that I left out was between my internship and the full-time gig a year later, I as a student reached out literally to over 300 people in the industry, at least two people at every single organization. I spent hours like hacking the code on what their email address was, and I reached out and I said, "Hi, I'm Alex. I'm a student. I'd love to just pick your brain and better understand like what you do." And I must have had literally over 180 conversations in that next sort of 6 to 9 month time frame to build relationships, to network, to learn. And so when those jobs eventually came up, people were thinking of me, or alternatively, I could reach out to anybody at just about any organization, but and just say, "Hey, there's a job open." But there was a lot of freaking work that went into actually getting that full-time job. So I accidentally backed my way into an internship, and I'm very, very thankful for that. But yeah, it's a lot of freaking work if you want to work in the industry, and you have to have a good reason to do it. Don't work in the industry just because sports is cool. What you hear so often, like you have to have a real reason. It's an industry that's here to make money at the end of the day, just like anything else. So you have to love what you're doing, or else you're going to wash out pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's so true. That persistence in trying to get it. I'm going to pause on that just for a minute because again, we have people who listen and the majority of people who listen, I think are more of that older, more experienced, I'll say. But at the same time, there are people who are of the younger generation who are listening and who have been on the show and stuff. So I think that that message of like if you're trying to get in or you're in and you're trying to get that next level, that like incredible persistence. And it's also for those of us who are more experienced, it's that remember that when these people are reaching out, it's an opportunity to give back to that next generation, that opportunity. It also helps you to your point, like, oh, I don't have anything open right now, but I'm going to talk to this person and either help somebody else out who may have an opening, or I'm going to find out I want Alex in the next time I have something open up. So, super, super, super important. And one day we'll have to laugh about my time when I was in the MBDL, now G League. I was sitting in the basement of the Asheville Civic Center because it was the Asheville Altitude at the time, secretly in the corner. I thought it was secretly calling every NBA team, like, head of marketing. Hi, I'm Shauna, and I want to get to the next level. So it's like, I think so many people who are in the industry have that story to tell about, the doors they beat down to get in. So.
Unless you have an incredible mentor or someone who is just gonna drag you along, you gotta work hard to make your own luck, right? And that's a really easy thing to say. But the people who hustle, the people who work hard, the people who continually push themselves to learn more and to sort of expand their own horizons through being a sponge and learning as much as they can, and what I like to call intellectual curiosity, that goes far.
Yeah, absolutely. So along the way, I know we talked about leadership a little earlier, but I'm curious, when in your career did you start to see yourself as a leader? You may have always from the beginning, and it may have just been something that was always there, or did you have or an experience or something, someone who pointed it out to you?
Great question, and I think I actually probably knew that this one was coming. But wish I had a better prepared answer. No, I think it does kind of feel funny to say like, oh, I'm a leader, by the way. So like, yeah, like I know that, I run teams and I've hired many people in my past, but it's always still kind of weird to be like, oh, I'm a big time leader or mentor or whatever. I'm a big believer in servant leadership. That's a lot of my style. I like to run really flat organizations, and I think I felt, I'll say it this way. I think I really felt empowered to go make decisions and lead a team. I'll put it that way. During my time at Monumental, and I had really great encouragement from bosses that I originally, my first bosses there, which was actually the chief marketing officer, Joe DePriest, and my director at the time, Tom Nagel, were really big on if you have an idea, go and try it. Go and run with it. Don't wait for us to be the ones to tell you yes or no. Like, go break things, right? Obviously, use good judgment and don't do crazy things, but like, go and do it. And especially working on the team side, and I think Monumental is one of the best out there. There's a lot of opportunity to try a lot of different things because resources and people are limited. So if you're willing to put in the time and the effort and try new things, you're able to do it. And I started coming up with ideas and data tracking that I wanted to do that nobody else was working on the marketing side and on the sponsorship side, and building all these reports and insights and working with the sponsorship team to help them make better informed decisions in that storytelling process, and no one was stopping me. And if anything, they kept encouraging me, and I had a team that I was able to manage. And so I'd say sort of surreptitiously over the several years that I was at Monumental, I just was encouraged to grow and encouraged to lead a team and come up with ideas and not have to wait for other people to say go. I think having that being empowered to do that was a really big step. And then, I had other bosses, Josh Brickman, Adam Heinz, all cut from a very similar cloth of just saying, take it and run with it, like this is your domain. I would say that sort of having those great leaders at Monumental really shaped, I think, a lot of one, who I am today and how I approach these things, but really gave me my first sort of taste of, hey, like, go lead. Like, this is your time to do it. So it's great. It's very fortunate.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I will clarify, when I say when did you realize you're a leader, what I don't mean is, and I think you know, well, you do know, I'm very much also in agreement about servant leadership. And we talked about that earlier in this episode. And so, you know, I what I don't mean is like I'm the boss of everybody and I'm leading
Right.
people and I'm leading this company. It's that it's the mindset. And to your point, what like I think that we have moments in our path where we realize that we have that ability to drive something forward, to initiate something, to rather than, you know, sitting back and reacting or being told, hey, you need to go do this. And so I think it's almost sometimes like this little bud of a I'm sounding like such a dork with like this flower, like
Perfect. Let it out.
this like I know, right? This like blossoming flower. But it is like a little bit of bud. It's like a spark where you're like, oh, I can actually go lead something, make some magic happen. And then it kind of goes from there when you realize I think that you can actually have an impact on the people, on the business. So that's why I think sometimes people are curious, how does someone who's gotten to the, like a position when you're in, when you're CEO and founder of a company and you're leading the company and the people, it's like, well, what was the thing that kind of got you started believing in yourself as a leader? Because I think there is an element of we, it almost allows you to prove yourself to yourself and you're like, oh, I can actually do this. So thank you for giving us a little bit of a taste of that. And you talked about your style as servant leadership. So I couldn't agree more on that one.
And it's all about experiences, right? And I think that the big thing that I've tried, I'm sure you'll agree with me, which is put yourself in uncomfortable situations to be able to grow and to add more tools to your tool belt, so to speak, right? And I think are so cliche, like our experiences shape us, but they really do. And I genuinely actually mean this. And I've had great bosses and I've had really bad bosses before. And I feel fortunate for that. And that's not a backhanded thing, but it's like you can see different styles, things that worked for me and things that didn't. And so you can sort of take the things that you like and sort of stay away from the things that you don't. And you try to mold that, and then you realize that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Then you have to sort of modify your own style. And like you never get it right. Like I still get things wrong all the time. And I try to take a step back and figure out like how do I do that differently next time? But it's I do feel very fortunate to have tried a lot of different things, seen a lot of different styles, and be able to sort of cherry pick how to sort of build my own style, so to speak.
Totally. And two things on that. I agree with you completely. Like, I actually think I've learned, I want to say the most from examples of what I don't want to do as a leader, as a leader of people, as a leader in business. And again, I've had those people in my journey where I'm like, oh, wow, like that is not what I want to do. But again, it's like I know that because I experienced it firsthand. So there are, I guess you could say there are a lot of positives that can come from an experience with someone who's not who you want to be. And I think you talked earlier about that curiosity. And I think curiosity is not only for the discipline that we're in, for the, you know, but it's also the curiosity in continuing to evolve and, you know, as a
Sure.
leader and as, you know, also as a practitioner of whatever the business that we're in. So I'm like that. I wear that nerd badge proudly, you know, where it's like I'm constantly learning things and, you know, so and from people and just in my own kind of research about things. So, yeah. So I want to. I know we're gonna wrap up pretty soon, but I wanted to get your thought. You've also done quite a bit in growth, and growth has been, it like kind of emerged in the last few several years as like the buzzword that everybody's using.
Sure,
And
100%.
you know, and I think, but it really comes down to, again, we've talked about this throughout. This was like the business impact, and so I'm curious from your experience in, you know, in growth, in what you're doing, you know, what are you think are some of the keys to being like a successful approach to growth in the business?
Yeah, and I'm gonna take the like the really like you could probably guess what I'm gonna say. And by the way, growth like is the absolute buzzword. It's like it's on my LinkedIn, so like I use it all
Yeah, I do too, but I believe in it. I don't mean it in
way
a
to
fluffy
call me
way.
out.
I actually
No,
believe in it.
I know. It is, but it has been really big for the last 5+ years now. I think it's it
Yeah.
really I think started to grab a lot of traction like 2017, 2018 especially. To me, growth, you're going to get a different answer from everybody you talk to.
Of
For
course.
me, it's about having a sound data approach. In terms of like how do you use data to make impactful decisions? That is super easy to say. My experience in growth was leading a business intelligence team and a marketing team. I sat over, a 20 plus, 30 plus person team at my last organization, which was a loyalty e-commerce before Trajectory. And it was really trying to take a very strong data approach. However, and I think this is perhaps some people might be surprised to hear me say this, you have to be able to blend quantitative and qualitative feedback. And there are times as a marketer where data might be saying one thing, but you might want to try and test things that are a little bit more by the gut, so to speak. And so you also have to be careful as a data-driven person not to only listen to data either. Like sometimes you really do have to try to take a step out of it and say, hey, like, does this really make sense? Like, should we be doing this? Like, maybe we should try something else just to like A/B test it, or whatever it ends up being. And so my approach to growth has come back to how do you combine the qualitative and quantitative? But the key piece to all of it, in my opinion, is you have to be able to take this data, take this information, take these insights, and you have to be able to translate it into action and actual strategy, right? There's so much noise, there's so much data out there, there's really no shortage of it. But what to do with that data, one, is important to identify, but it completely falls by the wayside if you can't communicate it correctly to the people that need the information to make decisions. And so I call it, and we talked about it earlier, which is storytelling with data, right? How do you bridge the gap between data analytics and strategy? And that's not an easy thing to do. And it's really hard to be a person that can sort of straddle both of those spheres. That has been a lot of my career is like, how do I stand on both sides? How do I get really deep into the data? But how do I storytell and make strong action? And how do I communicate really well on the other side? And so growth for me is really the combination of a lot of those things, which is how do you use data to one, how do you use data? How do you to create sort of like what are the next steps to try to be successful using that information, but then how do you communicate it well?
Yeah, absolutely. When you were saying that, you said the word insight, and then it sparked me to think about sometimes that insight is, I think, if you're talking about like consumers and what motivates the consumers to take an action, to your point, sometimes you're gonna get to that through that quantitative information, and other times it's that qualitative, that gut thing that you can't actually explain or you can't actually put a number to. I do think that's a really great point. It's that mixture, because I think that actually makes it relevant, and it makes it people can say like, oh, okay, they can see how it can come to life. They can, to your point about that storytelling. So especially the people who are using it then have to actually then go and tell that story. Thank you so much for going there. I know it's such a, I really do believe in the language around growth. Part of the reason why I love it so much is because I think previously, if someone was just saying, oh, they would talk about like revenue generation, and it would be see very siloed, or driving, engagement or awareness, again, very siloed. I think of growth as a much more inclusive, because you really are when you're trying to impact all of those things at the
Right. Well,
hopefully.
it's like when someone asks you, like, what are you doing? You're like, business. Like,
Yeah.
okay. Like, growth. All right. Like, could
I
be
know
marketing, could
exactly.
be
You're like,
revenue, could be business intelligence. Like, it could be all those things. Growth is different to every organization, and not only different to every organization, but it's different to like the maturity of that organization. I got my dog popping up here, so he might chop in the background. But like, right? Like, if you're a mature organization, growth for you could be retention,
yeah.
right? Whereas growth for somebody else could mean we're a budding startup and we need to make revenue, 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 and shoot for the moon. So
Yeah,
You know, means a lot of
absolutely.
things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to tell you, your dog actually made me realize this, which is our time. Your dog's probably coming in being like, Dad, you gotta get off this because you have something else. So I'm gonna wrap this up. We've hit on so many topics. You've generously shared so much. I really appreciate it. And I think just the if people are like listening to this whole episode, and if there's one or two takeaways that you want to make sure that people have or really think about coming away from it, what would that be?
Data doesn't have to be daunting. There's a better way to do things. There's always another way, right? You don't always have to be reliant on what people are telling you. But I think, look, I think from like sort of my background trajectory and like what we've built, like data doesn't have to be daunting. Like we help organizations storytell, and we think we do it in a better way, and I think we're unique because we've actually sat in the seats of the teams and the agencies and the brands, whereas a lot of other tech companies haven't. But then beyond that, I think the thing that I always like to just maybe sort of leave with some thoughts is like hire good humans, work with good people, right? Like life, it sounds so weird to say it, but like life's short.
Yeah.
Like you can hate your job and whatever, but like surround yourself with good people and like good things happen, right? Whether or not it be your advisors, whether or not it be the people that are your colleagues, work with good humans, and that's more than half the battle. So, yeah, that's my two cents.
It's awesome. Both great takeaways. I appreciate you so much. I am truly so
Appreciate you.
honored to be an advisor with you folks. You want to talk about any of the topics that we talked about here? I will make sure that you're able to get in touch with Alex. You can reach out to me or him directly. And I just want everybody to have a great day. Thank you so much. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you. Good
Yeah.
seeing you as always.
You too. Bye, everybody.